Here we go.
If you don't mind crunching, and I didn't get any dinner tonight, so I'm going to eat this and then work it off on stage.
Okay. No worries at all. Okay. First, I guess, you guys have been back for a few years now. What's it like touring now in 2019 as opposed to when you guys were up and coming in the late 90s?
It's mellower. We're all a little more responsible, especially me. There's definitely more of an optimistic air about things than there was back then. Back then, we were so full of ourselves. You know, in the 90s, the first time around, we were much younger. That was 20 years ago. And you'd never really been on the road on a big tour. And, you know, not realizing that you play every night. If you party every night and you have to get up and do interviews the next day and you have to do this, and photo shoots and everything, then you get to play again and the cycle continues. And you do that for a year and a half, you do a tremendous amount of damage to your body. You
know, physical
damage and mental damage as well. And with no breaks. And so, you know, knowing that and coming back on the road for, you know, sometimes extended periods of time, it's just a better life. It's a better lifestyle. So back then, you know, everybody's crappy. Nobody gets along, you know, because of that schedule, especially with the drinking and the drugs and the whole thing. So that schedule is, you get this perspective of, nothing's right, everything's wrong, and what's, why aren't we doing this, and why aren't we doing this? We just don't have that anymore. And we have this nice, great group of people that, you know, understand each other, have played together for a long time, and don't have those lofty expectations anymore. Just try to raise the bar for the live shows and for the albums, and not be beholden to any record label or anything. We are our own business, and that's a great relief to me.
Yeah, and like you said, putting it all into the live shows and the albums. You guys have put out a couple of records since getting back. Yeah. Parachute in 2017 was the last one, and I think that is a great record.
Appreciate that.
Does it get frustrating at all with the way the music business is now that you could put out the best record of your career and radio isn't going to bother and, well, you have the diehard fans? But.
Yeah. Well, I never thought I would say this, but, radio really is of no consequence anymore.
Right.
Satellite radio, sure, but we get plenty of play on satellite radio as it is, and we do get plenty of play in the kids' station with the kids' music. So we're still part of their scene, radio, but not, what's the word? Terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
It's nice not to have to write a single. Our songs always sounded like singles anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I always feel like our songs are catchy. I think the songs on Parachute are very catchy. But I knew years ago radio would never play anything from us again. I mean, I just assumed. Listening to what was on radio, on FM, I don't want to be one of those bands. I just hear the same song over and over and over, the same melody. And I don't want to be a part of that. So I knew that when we're making albums, we never go, well, we got to get on radio. We got to write something that's, we have repetitive and, forget the bridge. There's no bridge or pre-chorus. Why are we doing pre-choruses? Nobody, there's... But I enjoy all that. I enjoy the changes. I enjoy the landscape of each individual song. I enjoy taking people on a roller coaster ride, not only with the song, through melody and through instrumentation, but also as an album. I love putting albums out because you can take that listener on a ride if they choose to. And once it leaves us, they can do whatever they want with the album. They can listen to each individual song on their own or whatever. But, of course, we prefer people to listen to the album, start to finish, because we're trying to put them in the order we like. Radio and that kind of thing, it's not frustrating at all. I'm being completely honest, I could care less. I could really care less. I don't want that pressure of writing the singles.
Like I said, it shows. I mean, Parachute, can go up against any record that came out over the past couple of years and really hold its own. Right. Now, you mentioned the kids' music, which I just find fascinating, sort of that kind of dual life of the band now. Yeah. And believe it or not, a some friends of ours used to have a band called ZO2. Dave Z, the bass player, he was also in Trans-Siberian Orchestra and Adrenaline Mob, and fortunately passed away in a tour bus accident not too long ago. But they used to do the same thing. They had a kid's version of what they would do, and they actually had a show on IFC for a while called Z-Rock that was, you know, kids band by day, rock band by night.
Sure.
You know, I mean, how do you guys switch from one to the other?
That's easy. I mean, I think that, you know, if you were to, first of all, if you were to take, musically take the lyrics out of, you know, all of the albums, kid albums or the rock albums, it would sound like the Verve Pipe. It would sound the same. I mean, we have the same, I have the same song structure. That's how my head works. Again, I mentioned the pre-choruses and the bridge and the four-part harmonies and that kind of thing. So take the lyric out of it. The only difference really is the silly lyric for the kids' music. And so that transition is easy. Now, I don't cuss at the kid shows, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the death, the nail. Although Perry Farrell did a show with us because he ran Lollapalooza Kid Stage. And he came up and dropped the F-bomb on stage with all the kids. I was like, oh, my God, dude, what did you do? So the transition, the only issue I've ever had with a kid show and then doing a rock show at night, which we've done, you know, kids show during the day and the rock show. Kid shows are exhausting. They're exhausting. You have to be on for an hour straight. I mean, you can't let your guard down. You can't have any segues that are long, you know, which we like to do at our shows. We like to have nice musical segues and those kind of things. If kids get bored at a kid show, their parents are going to get mad at you. And then that's to a kid's band as well. So the kid show, you got to go out there and punch everybody in the face with rock and roll and keep doing it. And if you're not pounding it from start to finish and the kids get bored, then you've lost them. And so those are exhausting shows. And plus I pour cereal out of my guitar all over my body. You know, it's ridiculousness. You know, we have a wrestler come out who wrestles a giant Godzilla. I mean, it's like we do all this silly, fun stuff, but man, it just kills me. It's so tiring.
Well, that's right. I mean, like, our kids are a little older now, but I remember when they were smaller, the best kids' music is the one that doesn't treat it as kids' music.
Absolutely.
That still uses the instrumentation that you would use on a regular song and just change, you know.
To... You can't talk down to them.
Right.
You know, my kids get the joke. My three-year-old, he gets the joke. He's got a great sense of humor. He gets the joke, you know, and, you know, just... making fun of the English language. Why do they call it a hamburger? There's no ham in it. That kind of thing. You know, we have all these songs that have these kind of things where kids think and go, yeah, that's really silly. And then parents think about it too, and they like it too, because, you know, it makes you think about things.
Yeah.
But it can't be all potato, potato, you know, whatever the wiggle stuff is, which is fine for toddlers or toddlers and younger.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not the only answer to kids' music.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of great kids' music. Dan Zane's a great example.
Yep.
Godfather of kids' music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's spectacular. Mm-hmm. We go on, we put on this powerhouse show. He follows us with just a guitar, an acoustic guitar, and then a banjo or whatever sometimes, and then, you know, harmonica. And he kept these kids entertained for an hour after we got done. And I just sat there in awe and just went, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
That is what I'd love to do too, you know, to be able to do that. So.
And now in the Verve Pipe shows, how have you seen sort of the audience change over the years? Like, you know, when you look out there now, do you see basically like the people that were there in the original run, or is it people that may have missed that original run and come, you know, getting on board now?
25% are people that were there back then.
Mm-hmm.
25% of them have grown up.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen them grown up.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them grow up, you know, coming back, doing solo shows, and we all get older together. That's 25% of the crowd. Another 40, 50% of the crowd knows the freshman, knows Photograph, you know, a couple of the more popular songs. And then they'll really enjoy the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's those who don't really know, maybe know the freshman a little bit, you know, and I know that song, I know that band, or they don't know the difference between the Verve and the Verve Pipe, you know, that kind of thing. You get those people that come in. And hopefully they leave pleasantly surprised. So that's, you know, that's what you're looking for. So, but mostly it's about 25% of people that I'm familiar with over the last 25 years.
And now, what's your relationship with the freshman? I mean, is it like, you know, because you always hear the famous story of Billy Joel where he's like, you know, stab myself in the eye rather than play Piano Man one more time, but that's the song everybody wants to hear, so I'll play it every night. You know,
I don't feel that way about... This is going to sound terrible. I'm trying to make it not sound as bad. I never liked Piano Man. So it's hard for me to, like... He's got so many other songs that are great. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, The Stranger, that album, 52nd Street, those albums are the best Billy Joel albums. And Piano Man, to me, from the first time I heard it, I thought, okay, I'm singing along. It's like a Harry Chapin song. I love Harry Chapin. It's like he's telling a linear story and the whole thing. It's like, I get it, okay. So it's hard for me to have perspective. I can say this. I don't feel that way about The Freshman. That he feels a way about it. I feel like The Freshman came out at a time when nobody was really writing meaningful lyrics and that were on the radio. I mean, there were plenty of people that were writing meaningful lyrics and stories. But it wasn't getting on the radio like ours did. At that time, it was a very grungy time that we came out. You know, cumbersome. I'm trying to think of the bands that we toured with, you know, Seven Mary Threes, with those guys, Tonic, those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that they had the same linear story that we had.
Right.
And that's what stuck out, and that's what helped us. So I'm very proud of that song. I think that it's a good story, and I think that it stands the test of time. We still have people that really enjoy it. And the one thing Billy Joel is right about is that, yes, people want to hear that song. They expect to hear that song. And that I know that I'm pleasing people, and that we're that people are enjoying their night, because we strive to be entertainers too. I'm perfectly happy with playing it. Absolutely happy with it. I know when I look down the set list, and this is a very this is an insider's thing with musicians and people who play live. You know that if you're playing The Freshman here, that right before it you can play something new or anything. You can get away with a lot of stuff around The Freshman.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a trick of the trade. Like, you don't play three hits in a row and then The Freshman, you know what I mean? So we have a good balance in there, too, that's very helpful from a practical standpoint. So it's a win. It's a win-win all the way around. If we're having a bad show and The Freshman's coming up...
Yeah, it picks it right up.
It picks it right back up, and people can walk out because they sang along with The Freshman and say, oh, that was an amazing concert. And we go, it wasn't one of our best.
Well, and it's funny, like, going back to the last record... Like, when I listen through and hear a song like Wallflower, to me, that's the answer to, you know, The Freshman 20 years later.
Oh,
you know, if, like, those kids asked an adult what was going on, the Wallflower would have been their answer.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting to see how, you know, themes always tie together.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think that comes with who the songwriter is, too, and what their story is and how they want to tell that story, you know. I feel like we should play Wallflower too tonight, but
I'd love that.
I know. Here's the issue. It's a short set tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shorter. Typically we play 2 hours.
Yeah.
Tonight's like a little over an hour. And it's like we have to play all these other songs, and then I got Joel doesn't like the bass. He didn't bring his bass pedal with him. So I apologize.
Yeah, okay. We'll let it go for
tonight. If you hang out afterwards, I'll tell you what, I'll play it for you guys personally if you hang out afterwards.
That works for me.
How about that?
Yep.
Come back here.
It's a deal.
After the show.
Yeah.
I'll sit back here with an acoustic guitar and I'll play a walk.
That's a deal.
All right.
And one last one, I'll let you get ready.
Okay.
You know, you don't do extensive touring. You know, you do kind of short bursts. Have you ever, you know, been approached for any of like the 90s package tours or the cruises or the stuff like that? Do you guys do a lot?
We don't typically do that. You know, we were going to do... There was one we came close to doing with Sugar Ray, and I mean, I love those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they were going to do the Sugar, there was some cruise and that kind of thing. I thought, oh, that'd be interesting to go out and bond and that kind of thing. And just, I don't know, there's something about it. Just doesn't.
I think it pigeonholes you to a certain sound and a certain air and doesn't really let you grow past
that's
that.
That's fine. I mean, I think that, but that's fine with me. I just think it's like, we like to do our own thing.
Mm.
I mean, we've always liked to do our own thing. You know, we didn't go on the Summerland tour the first time when Art from Everclear wanted to do it and wanted us to come out. It's like, you know, I just thought he asked us to go, we're going to go on early. And, you know, I'm just like, I don't know if I want to do that. You know, be one of six bands. It's never interest me. Like, I'd rather just call the shots and play a smaller place and decide who we want to open for us and that kind of thing, and just have a two-band night at the most. Sometimes we don't even have two-band nights. Sometimes we just do a two-hour show.
Yeah, you know, I think from a fan perspective, I mean, I'd rather see you guys come out there and play 2 hours of your stuff rather than a half hour because there's six other bands behind you.
Yeah. So. No, I bet you that's true. I bet you that's true with with a lot of people. But, you know, this it might have something to do with my hatred of radio festivals. I had such a hard time with radio festivals.
I think I saw you on a couple way back in the day here in Hartford with 104.
Yeah. I hit with a bottle and knocked me out. I had coins thrown at me. Because when you put bands together like that, the worst one we ever did was in Dayton, Ohio. And, you know, there was a Coca-Cola promotion. They came out with the Big 20s, I remember. And you know, then you put bands that don't have anything to do with each other. You know, you've got, back then it was like Goldfinger and then Verve and then, you know, Duncan Cheek or something. And, like, and people that like Duncan Cheek don't want to listen to Goldfinger, and then Goldfinger fans definitely don't want to listen to Duncan Cheek. And so those bottles started getting thrown, like full Big 20 bottles of Coke. And then when the empty bottles wouldn't fly far enough, they'd filled them with rocks. So then they were throwing giant bottles of rocks. And then all that stickiness from the Coke was on the stage by the time we went up. And that attracted the bees. So there were bees up there at the same time. This is like, that's the epitome of the worst gigs. And so I think that's part of it. Like putting six bands together. It didn't disaster for me. I just have zero interest in it. And I like all these guys. I like all these bands. You know, we all love each other. I mean, we have nothing but love for them, but putting them together on one stage, that's just, I just have zero interest in it.
And you guys are just kicking off this leg, right?
Just a short two weeks. Yeah. That's typical of us now. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks at a time.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
No,
can't wait for the show.
Well, thank you.
Can't wait for Wallflower after.
All right. Well, good. Well done. Yeah.